Please join me in 2 Kings chapter number 8, starting at verse number 25 in just a moment. The material that we're about to start with is parallel to the material we ended with yesterday over in 2 Chronicles 22. We're looking at the rise of a very short-reigned king in Judah by the name of Ahaziah. But this story that we're about to go over represents a great tragedy in the history of the divided kingdom period. Because we've got the blending together of the royal families of both the north and the south, so that by their intentions, they were trying to bring the kingdoms back together. But what really happened is that it allowed a vector, a means of infection to occur between the pagan worship of Baal and Asherah that was going on in northern Israel to come down into the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, when we first started talking about the blending of these two royal families, it was King Ahab and Queen Jezebel in the north, marrying their daughter, Athaliah, off to the son of Jehoshaphat in the south. And Jehoshaphat seems to agreed with this procedure, which I have to confess to you, I find somewhat surprising, because he was a good king, a good man, a man after God's own heart. And yet, on numerous occasions, he came to the very edge of God's patience because he kept wanting to have intimate contact and relationship with the northern kingdom. And so the marriage of his son Jehoram to Athaliah from the north set the stage for everything that we're going to look at today. All right, so this is what it says. 2 Kings 8:25. In the 12th year of Joram, or Jehoram is his fuller name, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, began to reign. Now, I put a date of right around 852 BC, probably in the second half of the year. Ahaziah was 22 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Athaliah. She was the granddaughter of Omri, king of Israel. Omri is mentioned because he's the founder of this dynasty. Her mom and dad are Ahab and Jezebel, the late Ahab and the still alive and causing trouble Jezebel. Verse 27, more about Ahaziah. He also walked in the way of the house of Ahab and did what was evil in the sight of he who is, as the house of Ahab had done, for he was son-in-law to the house of Ahab. Now, son-in-law, not in the exact same sense we would mean that, but rather his mom was the daughter of the king of Israel, and therefore that connection has come as an in-law relationship. All right. The next part of the story is this. He went with Joram, that would be his uncle, Jehoram, the son of Ahab, to make war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead. Now, let me make a quick note here. Hazael, at this point in history, is not yet king of Syria. This is not a contradiction in the scripture. It is a common practice in historical documents to sometimes anachronistically refer to someone by their later title, such as President Lincoln was born in a log cabin. Well, he wasn't president when he was born, was he? That's just the way sometimes we speak. So this Hazael will eventually be the king of Syria. But at the present time of our story, he is the commander of the armies of Syria at Ramoth-Gilead. So that's who Jehoram and Ahaziah are going to go fight against. Now let's talk a little bit about Ramoth-Gilead. It's about 30 miles southeast of the southern end of the Sea of Galilee. It's about 70 miles south of Damascus, which is the capital city of the Syrian kingdom. And what has happened is somewhere back in time, the Syrians have pushed their southern border way down deep into eastern Israel, as far as Ramoth-Gilead, and established their borders right there. And we know that King Ahab objected to this. He tried to take Ramoth-Gilead back at one point. He even invited Jehoshaphat to come and help him in recovering this Israeli territory. And it nearly cost Jehoshaphat his life and did cost Ahab his life. And that's been several years earlier that that battle of Ramoth-Gilead took place. Well, here is Jehoram, the son of Ahab, and Ahaziah, the grandson of Ahab, who is the king of Judah. They've decided they're going to go and kick those nasty Syrians out of Ramoth-Gilead and recover the territory for their combined families' dynasty. Well, the fight does not quite go as they'd hoped. And we're told in the last part of verse 28 that the Syrians wounded Joram. So Jehoram, the king of northern Israel, gets hurt in battle. No details about his wound, only this. King Joram returned to be healed in Jezreel of the wounds that the Syrians had given him at Ramah when he fought against Hazael, who will soon be king of Syria. So Jezreel, we know that that was a favorite hangout city for Ahab and Jezebel. It's a very beautiful city in the valley of Jezreel. It's about 20 miles by road, maybe. West of the Jordan Valley. So we're talking about a place that's 50, 60 miles by road from Ramoth-Gilead. So even by chariot, a couple days ride to get from Ramoth-Gilead to Jezreel. And so Joram is convalescing at the palace in Jezreel. And then, we are told, Ahaziah, his nephew, the king of Judah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Joram, the son of Ahab, in Jezreel because he was sick. So the nephew, the young nephew, goes to check on his uncle's war wound. So both kings, the king of northern Israel and the king of southern Judah, are in exactly the same spot at exactly the same time, which sets up the next event. 2 Kings chapter number 9. Then Elisha, the prophet, called one of the sons of the prophets. Remember, the sons of the prophets are just a group of men that are being trained by Elisha and other senior prophets to serve God, to act as God's messengers to the people of northern Israel. So Elisha calls one of his proteges, one of his students, and he said to him, tie up your garments. That's what you do when you're getting ready to take a run, because they'd have long robes on, at least down to the knees or so. And so if you want to run real fast, you just reach down between your legs behind, grab the tail of your garment, pull that up, tuck it into your belt, and you've now got athletic shorts. So tie up your garments, take this flask of oil in your hand, and go to Ramoth Gilead. When you arrive, look there for Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi. Now, this Jehoshaphat is not the southern king Jehoshaphat. This is another Jehoshaphat. So, Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, go in and have him rise from among his fellows and lead him to an inner chamber. So, listen to the very precise instructions here. You run as fast as you can to the battle camp at Ramoth Gilead. You find Commander Jehu. You bring him to a private chamber to have a conversation with him, and then do this, verse 3. Then take the flask of oil, pour it on his head, and say, "Thus says he who is, I anoint you king over Israel." Then open the door and flee. Do not linger. So this unnamed student, this unnamed prophet, is being sent on a mission where he will anoint a new person over the kingdom of northern Israel. And there's not going to be a big deal about it. It's going to be kind of a hit and run mission. Dump the oil on his head, tell him God's made him king, and then get out of there as fast as you can go. So, well, before we go on to the next verse, this was actually something that Elijah had been told to do, to anoint Jehu as the king of northern Israel. And for whatever reason, it never got done while he was leading the sons of the prophets. So it has now been turned over to Elisha to make sure that it gets done. Verse 4. So the young man, the servant of the prophet, went to Ramoth Gilead. When he came, behold, the commanders of the army were in council. And he said, "I have a word for you, O commander." And Jehu said, "To which of us all?" See, because you got a whole bunch of commanders working together, because the kings are both gone. They're off at Jezreel. So these guys are trying to prosecute their war as best they can. So Jehu goes, "Which one of us are you talking to? There's a lot of commanders in this room." And he said, "To you, O commander." So he arose and went into the house. So their encampment must be somewhere near some permanent structures. And so the prophet convinces him to join him in this private residence. The young man then poured the oil on his head, saying, "Thus says he who is the God of Israel, I anoint you king over the people of he who is over Israel." Now, all of that was what we already read that Elijah said. There's a little bit more detail at this point. "And you shall strike down the house of Ahab your master, so that I may avenge on Jezebel the blood of my servants the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of he who is. For the whole house of Ahab shall perish, and I will cut off from Ahab every male, bond or free, in Israel. And I shall make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah. And the dogs shall eat Jezebel in the territory of Jezreel, and none shall bury her." So this sounds very much like the curse that's been put on the last couple of dynasties in northern Israel, that nobody is going to be given a good burial. Instead, they're going to be scavenged. So here, the tail end of the dynasty of Omri, the family of Ahab and Jezebel, they're going to come to a bad end, and they're not going to get a decent burial. Their bodies will be scavenged before anybody gets around to trying to bury them. So he opened the door and fled. So we now have a new king of northern Israel. In fact, we actually have now two kings in the northern country of Israel. One at Jezreel and one here at the battle encampment at Ramoth-Gilead. Verse 11. When Jehu came out to the servants of his master, he said to them, or they said to him, "Is all well? Why did this mad fellow come to you?" So apparently they are puzzled by this whole thing where a prophet, or what may have just looked like a messenger to them, pops in, says, "I need to talk to Jehu privately," takes him off to a private room, and then comes bursting out a few seconds later and runs off into the distance. And they're like, "What was that about, Jehu?" And he said to them, "You know the fellow and his talk." So he thinks that they are pulling a joke on him, that they're pranking him. And they said back to him, "No, that's not true. Tell us now. We didn't put him up to this. We don't know what happened inside that room." And so he said, "Thus and so he spoke to me, saying, 'Thus says he who is, I anoint you king over Israel.' Then in haste, every man of them took his garment and put it under him on the bare steps, and they blew the trumpet and proclaimed, 'Jehu is king.'" So you can tell from this that these commanders are not happy with the Ahab dynasty. They don't really care for their commander-in-chief. They don't care for their boss, Jehoram, the son of Ahab, the king of northern Israel. Because the moment they get word that a prophet says Jehu's the new king, they're on board with it instantly. And they are now going to back him as he goes to become, in reality, this new king. Verse 14, "Thus Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, conspired against Joram." Now, Joram, with all Israel, had been on guard at Ramoth-Gilead against Hazael, king of Syria, but King Joram had returned to be healed at Jezreel of the wounds that the Syrians had given him when he fought with Hazael, king of Syria. So, some repeated material, because we've probably got a couple of different prophets that have contributed to this section of the book of 2 Kings. So Jehu said, "Well, if this is your decision, then let no one slip out of the city to go and tell the news in Jezreel." So he immediately clamps down on any communication between the battle encampment and the place where the king, Jehoram, is recuperating from his war wounds. It's an information blackout because he does not want there to be any time or opportunity given for the target of his assassination to get away or prepare to fight for the throne. Verse number 16. "Then Jehu mounted his chariot and went to Jezreel, for Joram lay there, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, had come down to visit Joram." Now, as I told you, it's about 60-some road miles, I would guess, from Ramoth-Gilead, westward, down across the Jordan River, then up through a valley to the city of Jezreel. There are watchmen that were standing on the tower in Jezreel. And so they're keeping an eye out, particularly toward the east, because they know messengers will be coming from that direction with information about how the capture attempt against Ramoth-Gilead is going. And so this watchman was standing on the tower in Jezreel, and he saw the company of Jehu as he came. And he said, "I see a company." Now, I've actually stood on the east end of the ruins of Jezreel, not up on a high tower, down at the lower portion of where the bottom of the walls would have been. And you can see all the way to the Jordan River Valley from that position. So these guys would be able to see a chariot entourage coming from many, many, many miles away. It's only about 15 miles from the Jordan crossing up to Jezreel. So they would have seen the approach of this group with plenty of time to spare. So Joram, who gets this report that there's a chariot force heading toward Jezreel, said, "Take a horseman, send to meet them, and let him say, 'Is it peace?'" So has there been a capture? Is there a resolution to this fight between the Syrians and ourselves? So a man on horseback went to meet him and said, "Thus says the king, is it peace?" And Jehu said, "What do you have to do with peace? Turn around, ride behind me." And the watchman reported, saying, "The messenger reached them, but he's not coming back." So all of this is being seen by the watchman up on the walls, looking eastward. The first messenger just simply gets into the entourage and doesn't come back. Well, they sent out a second horseman who came to them and said, "Thus says the king, is it peace?" And Jehu answered, "What do you have to do with peace? Turn around, ride behind me." And again, the watchman reported, "He reached them, but he's not coming back. And the driving is like the driving of Jehu, the son of Nimshi, for he drives furiously." Now, no one is absolutely sure what the guy means by this. The word has to do with the idea of insane, crazy. And so maybe Jehu was known for just kind of weaving back and forth when he was riding in his chariot, running his chariot. He was like back and forth and just looked like a crazy person driving. But the watchman can tell at a distance it's Jehu that is approaching the city of Jezreel. So Jehoram, this is King Jehoram of northern Israel, said, "Make ready." And they made ready his chariot. Now, they would have had a chariot on standby all the time for the king. So it's just a matter of getting the driver up in it and bringing it around and picking him up. So Joram, king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, set out, each in his chariot, and went to meet Jehu. So both kings, Uncle Jehoram, the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and nephew Ahaziah, the king of southern Judah. They've got their own little chariots separate, and they are heading east out of the city of Jezreel. And apparently, it was immediately on the east side of the city that the property of Naboth the Jezreelite was located. Because it says that they went out to meet Jehu, and they met him at the property of Naboth the Jezreelite. Now, you remember the story that the palace at Jezreel was right next door to this little property, apparently outside the walls, we find out now, that he wanted to buy as kind of a kitchen garden area. And Naboth refused to sell it to him because it was his inherited property all the way back to the time of Joshua for his family. And Ahab started pouting about it. And Jezebel decided she'd fix it. And so she paid or arranged for a bunch of lies to be made about Naboth. And Naboth was executed, and the property then was confiscated into the royal property. So immediately to the east of the walls of Jezreel is where the two kings meet Jehu. Now, when Joram saw Jehu, he said, "Is it peace, Jehu?" So he wants to know, is it all over with? Is Ramoth Gilead's art? Has the border dispute been fixed in our favor? And Jehu said back to him, "What peace can there be so long as the whorings and the sorceries of your mother Jezebel are so many?" And that lets the cat out of the bag, doesn't it? And you can tell Jehu's heart. He hates the way that this family of Ahab and Jezebel and now Jehoram have been running things in northern Israel. And he particularly hates the religious things that Jezebel has doing with pushing the worship of Baal and Asherah. And so his response is, "We can't have peace as long as your family is in power." And that's a threat. And that's exactly how Jehoram interprets it. Verse 23, "Then Jehoram reigned about and fled, saying to Ahaziah, 'Treachery, O Ahaziah!'" So he whirls around in his chariot and starts heading the opposite direction. And Jehu drew his bow with his full strength and shot Joram between the shoulders so that the arrow pierced his heart and he sank in his chariot. So instantly, Jehoram is dead. Jehu said to Bidkar, his aide, "Take him up, throw him on the plot of ground belonging to Naboth the Jezreelite. For I remember when you and I rode side by side behind Ahab his father, how he who is made this pronouncement against him." So Jehu, we now find out, was a young officer, attendant to King Ahab, back when the prophet Elijah told him that he was going to pay a penalty for having stolen the property of Naboth. And we're out of time for the day, so we'll have to take up the rest of the story tomorrow. So please read a little bit more of this. Maybe go back and read the prophecy made against Ahab at the time when he stole this property.